to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about tool time. Let's talk about bull wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in, are they in harmony? Do, do, help a snowman, do.
Hey everybody, welcome to one of these. Boy, I really meant to get these done more regularly this year, but, an irregularity of a different sort has made that difficult. Maybe we'll get to that later, or maybe that'll be the next episode. We have a lot to cover today. I always, you know, you hear that, like, may you live in interesting times is a curse. And I don't know if I fully, I mean, I understood it. I'm not fucking stupid. But, you know, I don't know if you really understand it until you understand it. Because when, you know, like when I'm thinking about what to talk about on this show, sometimes I'm like, boy, I just don't have much going on. It's almost like a sign that my life is going well when you don't hear from me as often. Because it kind of means, yeah, things are going okay. Yeah, Pete's doing all right. But, I'm living in interesting times for me, I guess. So, you know, not good. But I wanted to kick it off a little something. As we discussed on this show, I had like a memorial show for my beloved 2000 Corolla, which I just had to say goodbye to in 2025. And I donated it to our local NPR affiliate or whatever, KUNC, and the Colorado Sound, I guess. Not so much the Colorado Sound. I don't give a shit about that. That's like their music, you know. It's like the same fucking thing, but, you know, that's the music side. I feel like the music side thinks it's so goddamn cool. And I don't agree with that. I'm like, you're still NPR. Calm down. But, I donated to them, and they sent me a letter. They actually sent me two letters, which were the same thing. I'm not sure why. But in this letter, they told me exactly how much they received from the sale of my donated vehicle. So, I don't know, take a moment and just make a guess in your mind. A 2025 Toyota Corolla, drivable. With failing transmission, however, tell me what you think that I might have gotten for that, or that they might have gotten for that. Well, just think about it for a minute, and I'll read this letter to you. For some reason, it says I live in Arizona, even though the city and zip code are right. Maybe that's why they sent me to. Dear Peter, thank you for donating your vehicle to benefit KUNC and the Colorado Sound, to a lesser extent, Colorado Sound. We know how difficult it can be to break the ties with a beloved vehicle. You have no fucking idea, all right? They should have done an entire This American Life on my car. Maybe they'd be up for that. They gotta be running out of shit at this point, right? They can't possibly have that many things left to really put on that show. Every day on KUNC, you hear something new, something vital and important to your life. I don't, because I don't actually listen to KUNC. We bring this critical work into your community by centering local and Mountain West coverage alongside daily newscasts and special local programs like In the Know Co., that's cute, and The Colorado Dream to illuminate local issues. And whether it's a community music meeting, roots music with Torch and Twang, or a deep dive into genres and artists with Music 101, there's always something unique to experience on the Colorado Sound. Accidental double tap at the end of the sentence here. Thank you for making a gift of support to sustain our work. I'm going to just tell you guys a pet peeve right now, is the double tap at the end of the sentence. And I'll tell you why. I used to do this too. This was like something I was trained to do as an English major. When you wrote short stories and shit, you always did the double tap. I'm pretty sure the double tap originates from typewriters. Because typewriters were not as precise as a computer. People would do two space bars after each punctuation at the end of a sentence just to make absolutely sure you could tell those were separate sentences. It makes sense in the typewriter days, right? Because, like, it's a mechanical device. So maybe I hit the typewriter one time and it's a little bit different than when I hit the typewriter or the space bar the next time. So you'd hit two because then you'd be sure you at least had a pretty good amount of space. This is no longer necessary. But my pet peeve with it is some people insist on continuing to do it, which would be fine, except I find that when most people do it, they don't do it consistently. If I get a piece that I need to edit for work and someone's done the double tap, I remove them, and I notice that not every sentence ends with it. Anyway, thank you for making a gift of support to sustain our work. You are welcome. Thank you. This is in bold for some reason. Thank you for your dedication to independent radio, where member support is continually transformed into truthful, well-researched, and fact-based reporting on KUNC and into hours of independent music discovery on the Colorado Sound. Again, you're welcome. Here we go. Your donated vehicle sold for, drumroll, $180.56, which we received on December 10th, 2025. Your tax deductible amount may not exceed the amount of the sale price listed above. If your tax identification number was provided, an IRS 1098C will be included with this letter. It was not. If you did not provide your tax identification number at the time of your donation, possibly because you thought, there's ain't no way this is going to be worth enough to justify me doing that kind of work, please contact our vehicle donation partners. Our community is our lifeblood. You know that. Thank you once again, Peter, for fueling our community with your support. We truly value your donation, both for what it will allow us to do and for the services it will provide for our larger community. This is from Tanny Turwelp, President and CEO. Many funny things about this. I mean, first of all, confirms what I believed. I mean, I was paying car insurance, you know, the entire time I was driving this car, and it got more and more expensive, which I would argue should have been going down, right? Because at that point, I was not paying for, if I lost a passenger side rearview mirror, I think State Farm would be like, yeah, it's totaled. You know what I mean? It's done. There's nothing we could do. It's replacing the mirror is going to cost more than the entire car. But the other thing I found sort of funny about this, I wondered, like, I guess everyone who donates a car gets the same letter, but they really should have, like, tiered letters. You know what I mean? Like this one that I got, which is just kind of generic and nothing wrong with it. But, you know, it doesn't fill my heart or anything. I wonder if you donate a more valuable vehicle, if they're like, ooh, give him the good letter. You know what I mean? I also wondered, it can be difficult to break ties with a beloved vehicle. Because I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, if someone donated a car that they'd had for 2 years or something, it's like, probably not that hard. But, you know, mine, it was like, I don't know. So I wonder if they're like, slightly different letters, depending. Also found it funny that I got two letters. So I was like, you know, the printing of the letters, the time it took to put them together, the stamp, all that shit. Someone had to put them in the mail. Like, yeah, I mean, it probably cost them, you know, the $180.56 has probably now turned into maybe $179.45 or something like that. The summary, it's pretty funny that your car can be worth so little that the donation that you got or that you gave for it can go down significantly because they had to stamp and mail two letters. While we're on the car subject, so I had a car rental for like a week while they fixed my car. It was pretty funny because, like, you go drop off your car at the car fix-em-up place. You take it in and they, like, look at it and they're like, here's how much it'll cost. And I'm like, okay, well, insurance is paying for that. And they're like, right on, sign this thing that says you're fine with insurance paying for this. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I am fine with them paying whatever you want to charge. That seems like not my problem, right? Like, I don't think I'm there to advocate for, like, oh, come on, I think you could do me better than that. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Whatever. They were charging me a bunch of money for $180.56 car. Can you imagine if you bought a car for $180.56 on Craigslist? What do you think that car would be like? So then, you know, I get the rental, and the rental place is like, okay, we'll just send someone to pick you up. And I was like, all right, great. So I'm sitting in the auto body place, and this lady rolls up in a Kia. And it's like, it's basically the same car I have, but, you know, Kia's version. It is like a 2022 Corolla, but Kia made it. I was like, this is essentially the same car. So she gets out and she's like, all right, come with me. You know, I'm here to pick you up. Now, she didn't like even ask my name or anything. She was just like, well, I'm here to pick up some guy. And here's some guy. I guess I must look enough like some guy to, you know, just go for it. So I get in the car. She starts driving and almost immediately hits another car. Almost hits another car immediately. It was a narrow miss. 100% not her fault, right? Because we were just driving down a street and a car just pulled out in front of her very slowly. And she definitely would have T-boned the guy if she hadn't been paying attention. You know, and whatever. And so then the guy drives away. She starts going and she's like, well, I definitely would have flipped him off if you weren't in the car, you know? And I was like, you know, whatever. I don't know. Doesn't really matter to me. Right. And she's like, but you know, you're in the car, so I'm keeping it professional. And I was like, okay. I mean, to a certain extent, you telling me that you would have done it kind of also dissolves the professionalism, right? Like, it kind of ruins it, whatever sort of, I don't know, thing you were going for, I feel. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like getting to say something. It's like being like, I don't know. I don't want to sound racist, but, and then you say a racist thing. And you're like, well, I said I didn't want to sound racist, so I'm kind of absolved. I feel like that's kind of the same action here. I would do this if I wasn't professional. And it's like, well, I think you telling me that you're not doing, I don't know. I'm mixed because I'm like, I guess not doing it with me and resisting the urge is somewhat professional. But telling me that you actively are resisting it kind of kills some of the goodwill you get from that. Anyway, then she proceeds to tell me for the rest of the drive about a multitude of accidents that she's been into. involved in. Now, this started off, you know, because she was like, I just had my car in the body shop. And I was like, oh, yeah. And she's like, yeah, I ran over. There was an antelope, a dead antelope laying in the road on the highway the night before Christmas Eve, too. You know, and she's like, and I ran over it and it fucked up the skid plate and some other things. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know. I was like, oh, that sucks, you know, and there's nothing you could do about that, right? The highway she was talking about, it's not like well lit or anything. She probably couldn't have seen it coming. And I was like, well, I don't think we're going to run over an antelope on the way back to Hertz in the morning on a weekday, but I guess we'll see. And then, and also, I did find it a little funny because she was like, she made a big thing out of it having been the day before Christmas Eve. And I was like, in my head, out loud, I was like, that sucks. But in my head, I was like, what's the statute of limitations as far as how close does it have to be to Christmas for it to be relevant that, you know, the number of days separate from Christmas you were? You know what I mean? A week before Christmas Eve, I'd be like, I mean, it almost sounds relevant when you say it that way, right? It's just like if you put it in relationship to Christmas Eve, it's like, but you know, that's like me saying, oh yeah, I'm 25 in some weeks. And it's like, I mean, yeah, I guess technically that's true, but the number of weeks is important. And when you're like, well, it's in relationship to Christmas Eve, here's when it happened. You know what I mean? I could be like, yeah, I mean, I guess my car got fucked up also 2 weeks before Christmas or something, but it didn't seem, that didn't seem close enough to be relevant. You know what I mean? Anyway, then she tells me, well, I also had another problem with my car, so I figured it was time, I'll just get everything fixed. And I was like, oh yeah? And she's like, yeah, I backed it into a pole. And she's like, here's the thing, it has like a sensor on the back that, you know, is supposed to tell you if you're going to hit something. And I was like, oh, okay. And didn't work. And she's like, oh, it worked. It started beeping, but I thought it would prevent me from hitting something. So I just kind of kept going because I thought the car would not allow me to hit a pole. And then it did allow me to hit a pole, which, again, I'm having a battle during this ride where I'm like, what I'm saying out loud to her is very different than what I'm thinking in my head. Cause I'm kind of trying to process all this. And I'm like, all right, so you thought the car would prevent you from hitting something. And like, I was telling Poon Master Flex this story later. Right. And I was like, and I was even thinking as I'm getting picked up, I was like, if I thought maybe my car did that, I think I would test it out. And Poon Master Flex was like, how would you test it? And I was like, I already know. I have a squat rack in my garage and I have to pull my car in pretty far to fit it in the garage with the rack. Like, it's a very tight fit. So what I've done is I've attached two pool noodles to the front. What would you call them? Struts, stanchions, bars of the squat rack, the part that the car would hit. And so even if I tap it just a little, there's no real damage or anything. You know what I mean? Because there's a fucking pool noodle on the front. So I was like, that's what I would do. I would back into that because I'd be like, well, even if I do hit it, it won't cause any harm. Certainly no body damage, but even if I didn't have that and I was just going to test it out by backing into a pole, I think I would do it really super slow. You know what I mean? And try to not do any damage. But you know, and she's like, well, it was beeping like crazy, but it didn't stop me from hitting it. And I was like, what do you say to that? You know what I mean? What were you thinking is what I would say to that. Or be like, why didn't you try it one time in a low stakes situation? But anyway, that was one of her other accidents. Then she told me about like two or three more accidents she had, including one where she said she just ran over a pile of bricks on the highway, which I was like, I mean, it's not impossible that she ran over a pile of bricks on the highway and had no warning. Boy, I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, these are just adding up to be strange. Really strange. Like, this is a person who gets in a lot of car accidents. And what makes it extra strange is that this is the person who is driving me to the car rental place. My life is in her hands to an extent, right? And it's a short drive, but not the most comforting thing she could be saying to me. You know what I mean? She could have talked about a lot of other things. But here's the real kicker. As we were getting close to the car rental place, she was like, yeah, we're not even supposed to actually talk when we're picking someone up. And I was like, oh, really? That seems weird. Because I was like, it would be strange to be like, no talking. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just sitting in the car and everyone who gets in the car, right, is probably going to say something. Like, maybe you could do an evaluation. If you pick them up and then they get in the back, you're like, okay, I'm chauffeuring this person. I will chauffeur myself. And so, you know, I'll just probably leave them alone. But if they get in the front seat, as I did, I don't know. Which, you know, afterwards, too, I was like, oh, should I have gotten in the front seat? Is that weird? And I was like, well, she's not a taxi driver. You know what I mean? Not even a shuttle bus. There was one time I drove to Arizona with my older brother because I was helping him drive a moving van out there. And then I took a shuttle back to the airport from where he lived. It was like, I don't know, hour, 2 hours. I was the only one in the shuttle bus. So, and I got in the back because, you know, I'm not like a let's chat with the driver person. I'm more of a, I'm going to just listen to some music and look out the window. But as I was getting in, he's like, oh no, come sit up front so we can talk because you're the only one in here. And I was like, all right. We are very different people. So, yeah, you know, anyway. So she's like, we're not supposed to talk at all. And that struck me as strange, right? Because it would just be, that's an odd thing. But then I started wondering, again, the internal head part and the external what I'm saying part fighting. I was like, I'm starting to wonder if we are told not to talk to people we pick up I have been told not to talk to people I pick up because. And it may have something to do with her chosen topics of conversation, because maybe, I don't know, but maybe she's picked people up and they've said a little something about like, yeah, so that lady who picked me up just basically spent the entire ride telling me about all of her automobile accidents, her many varied accidents, and that. It was a little weird. You know what I mean? It's a little, imagine getting in a Lyft and they basically spend the whole time talking about accidents they've gotten into, most of which don't seem like their fault. Although one where they backed into a pole and a thing was beeping telling them not to, but they thought the car would, you know, that seems like mostly their fault. So I did wonder, I was like, I wonder if this is like an everybody rule, or maybe this is a just for her rule, in which case I was like, yeah, I could kind of see it. I mean, I don't know. I think as a boss, I would probably start with like, listen, customers mostly seem to like you. You know, you get your people. She seemed like a people person. You know what I mean? Normal, average person, blah, blah, blah. But maybe your chosen topic of conversation isn't the best. I don't know. Like, as a boss, I feel like that's it. You just have to be like, listen, feel them out a little bit before you start telling them about the time you ran over a pile of bricks. You know what I mean? If you were going to share gory details about running over the corpse of an animal, maybe see if you can suss out whether or not they're down for that. I don't know. But anyway, that's my car pickup story. And then I get in the car, which she had just driven me there in, right? The car she picked me up in was the car I was taking for the week. And I drove, I don't know how many miles I drove, but I know I drove like $2.75 of gas worth. So that's an indication. And I get in the car and it's like a keyless car, which I've never experienced before. I had push button start and all that. So I get in and, you know, it was like, okay, I don't actually need to use the key fob to unlock the door. There's like a button on the side. But I was like, I don't know how to know when I'm locking it or unlocking it or whatever. And I was like, well, I'm not going to fucking look it up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to have this car for like 5 days. I'm going to spend a lot of time managing it. So I get in and like, I'm trying to start the car and I keep pushing the button and it just turns all the accessories on and off, but not the car, until finally, I guess I did it enough times that it was like, okay, grandpa, And the little dashboard computer thing was like, if you want to start the car, you have to push in the brakes and then push the button, which I did, and then it started. And I was like, okay, I guess that's like a safety thing or something. But then I was instantly pissed because I was like, how does that make any sense? I don't push the brakes on my car when I start it because it's a key. Like, why does it matter that it's a push button start versus a key, and it prevents you from starting it unless the brakes are depressed? That makes no sense. This car will not start unless the driver is depressed. And it started before I even got to the parking lot. So, and then, I was extra mad because I was like, this car is smart enough to know, to tell me what I'm doing wrong and that I need to push the brakes. But it's not smart enough to just start anyway. It's not smart enough to know that it's in park and it's not going to just go flying through a storefront or something. Like, it doesn't fucking make any sense. Who decided these things? Who? I hate technology that's like smart enough to tell me what I'm doing wrong, but not smart enough to just fix the problem itself. You know what I mean? It's like, I think you could fix this. I think you could if you thought about it. But yeah, I don't know. It's probably just being told by a young whippersnapper car how to drive. And I'm like, I've been driving since long before you were born, Sonny. But I'm also not so old that, you know, that's actually not to anyone's benefit. I feel like I'm in a good area of driving as far as like age and experience versus, you know, feebleness. Eventually I'll be so feeble that like driving would be a nightmare, right? Or like my reaction will be slow, my vision will be bad, and it's like, yeah, he really, time to take grandpa's license away. This is one of the good things about not having kids, guys. No one's going to have a discussion about taking my license away. I'll just move to Arizona where they give you a license and they're like, well, old people vote, so you have a license here for like 35 years. So if you renew it when you're 60, should be set. You know, you don't have to worry about it till you're 95, God willing. And by then, if you're still driving, I don't know, man. But yeah, there'll be no family to have that horrible discussion. I did want to update everyone as well. Oh, and by the way, I had the car for 5 days, returned it, got my car back, and now it's like a normal car again. It only took like 3 months. Anyway, I wanted to give everyone a Love is Blind update. My least favorite Netflix dating show that I've seen. I'm sure there's a worse one that I haven't watched. In fact, I know there's one that I hate more that I saw like half an episode of and was like, I can't. It was like one where people who've been engaged for a long time, it's called like Shit or Get Off the Pot or something. And like, you go with your fiance and then it's like, well, you either need to decide to get married or decide to break up or something. And it's like, and then a bunch of other couples in that same boat will be there. And, you know, you can have weird love triangles and shit. And I'm like, yeah, this seems like a bad idea. Because don't you go on that show. If you go on that show, do you expect to come out of it being like, and that's how we got married and it was a great decision? Or is it more like, well, maybe it's like this way we can break up and everyone on who watches TV will see why we should, why, you know, I'll be vindicated because they'll be like, you were right to break up with that person. But Love is Blind is a show predicated on the premise that love is in fact blind. And so what happens is a bunch of single people go into what they call pods, and they have dates with people across from them, but they can't see them. So they can talk, they can hear each other, and they can talk about stuff, but they can't see each other. And I think the concept here, it's not the worst idea. Because I think the idea is like, you would go on that show because basically you've been dating a bunch of hot losers, you know what I mean? Or total pieces of shit because you're attracted to them. And it's like, maybe me going to what I'm attracted to visually isn't working out for me. Now, it is a little bit of a flawed premise because I think people can also be attracted to terrible behaviors, but yeah, let's go with it. My main argument, though, with the show is that it doesn't believe its own premise. Because everyone on this show is, I would say, like a 7 or above. You know what I mean? There's no one on the show who is conventionally unattractive. I would say, you know, like they occasionally do something. Like there's a lady on this year who she has some kind of genetic condition and she had a bunch of birthmarks that she had to have removed because they were like potentially cancerous or something. And so she has an arm that looks fucked up. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be cruel. I'm just saying her arm looks, it looks like it was burned or something. You know, it's very, very scarred, et cetera, et cetera. Outside of that, very conventionally attractive, et cetera. All, keep saying et cetera. And that feels like the closest nod they've ever come to being like, what if we had someone on here who was a 4? But, you know, obviously it doesn't work because it's the kind of thing where when you first see it, you're like, whoa. But I mean, by the second or third time you saw her, you would just be, you'd be used to it almost immediately, right? You're going to get over it. You know, it's not like she's missing half her face and you can see her chewing her food through her cheek or something. You know what I mean? She's not Harvey Dent. So, and that's what I hate about the show the most is I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't think you guys believe your own premise, because if you did, I think you'd have a more clear mix of people who were and were not attractive. You know what I mean? And it's like, they faint at it. They'll have a woman on there who I would describe as curvy. And I wouldn't describe her as curvy because I'm avoiding saying fat. I would just genuinely say, yeah, she's curvier. And there are other ladies on there who are like super slim. Yeah, but you know, that's the range. It's, there's just not a lot of, Hoonmaster Flex once said to me, you know, after our wedding, from then on for the rest of our lives, I can just turn into Pig Grosso, which is like the meanest thing I hope anyone's ever said about her. And she said it about herself. But there are no Pig Grossos on this show. And I hate that. And like, on one hand, I get it, because it would be mean, right? Like, because, you know, so they meet without seeing each other and then decide to propose to each other, still having not seen each other. And so then they have the moment where they all meet. And like, it would be mean to set someone up in a situation where it's like, ooh, this person is not conventionally attractive. And the person they met in the pods is conventionally attractive. I don't think this is going to go well. You know what I'm saying? And that seems cruel to the not conventionally attractive person. Like, you know, you're putting them through a thing. But on the other hand, I'm like, isn't that the whole fucking idea? Is like, I date the wrong kind of people. I need to start dating someone who's not like the people I date. And also, if the idea is love is blind, well, there you go. I mean, if love is supposed to be blind, shouldn't it not matter what the person looks like? But this season, there's one person on the show who I found especially annoying. And the reason is, okay, so they're in the pods talking about stuff. And he's like a big soccer guy. And he loves playing soccer. And he was like gonna, okay, his story is that he was going to get drafted to play for a soccer team, a pro soccer team. But he got like a knee injury and had multiple surgeries. And when the draft was happening, he was like completely laid up and, you know, his dream died that day. He's like, I would have been in the top 5, top 10 for sure. But, you know, instead, I'm just sitting there watching my friends get drafted. And I was watching it with a bunch of friends and you know, they all got pumped up watching the draft and were like, let's go play soccer. And then they just left me there by myself, you know, laid up. And my dream died that day. And like, he still wants to be a soccer coach. And I think he still played soccer in some form or whatever. And I think there are a couple things I really had a problem with this guy's tale of woe. I mean, one is like, look, this is going to sound harsh, okay? Part of what makes a professional athlete and professional athlete isn't just talent and isn't just hard work. It's also talent and hard work and luck that prevents them from getting injured. Not getting injured is a major part of being a professional athlete. Because if you have a major injury, a career-ending injury before you even have a career, it's not going to happen, right? And so, like, I was like, well, I mean, that's a little like me saying, oh, man, I would have been a professional runner if I was just much better at running. If I didn't lack this thing that I definitely lacked and was very significant. And it's like, I would have been a professional soccer player if I didn't lack this significant thing, which was health of my joints. Do you know what I'm saying? But the other thing is I was like, you know what, man, fuck off. Because when you have a dream and you're like, he must have been in his early 20s. And like, your dream is to play professional soccer. And I'm like, well, how many years does that last? You know what I mean? It cannot last that long. But beside that point, I think we all have our dreams crushed. And I think the way to have your dream crushed, that's the merciful, better way to have your dream crushed. Because it's like, you're still in your early 20s. Like, you can do something completely different, right? And I think it's like, because you're young, and this is mean for me to say, because it's like, young people don't understand. But like, when you're young, what were you going to do with the rest of your life? You know what I mean? Even if soccer worked out and you did that for 7 years and you got finished, you were 29. What comes after? Because if your plan was to play soccer until you were 29 and then just that would be the peak of your life. You know what I mean? It sucks, I think, if the peak of your life is too early in your life. And I have two stories about this. One is from my personal life, and it was when I was coaching track at a middle school, and I was on a bus with like three other track coaches. Two of them, you know, they were clearly in a phase of life where they didn't want to let go of their youth. And, you know, they seemed like big man on campus types in their past, but, you know, they were like in their mid 40s, and the other one was not that kind of guy. And these two big man on campus type guys were like telling me, you know, college, like early college, that's the best. You know, you can party, you can do whatever you want. You feel great all the time. You know, you can, I don't know. There's girls, there's all the whatever. It's so great. That was the best time of my life. Both of them are telling me this. And the other guy kind of leaned over and was like, don't listen to them. And he was like, I'm way past that time, and like, this is the best time of my life. And I try to make every time the best time. And if it's not the best time, you know, I do what I can to fix it. And it doesn't always work, but like, if the best time of your life is when you're 20, then you're going to have like 50, 60, 70 years to live beyond the best time of your life. Like, that's all going to suck. How does that make any sense? And why would you do that? You don't want to do that. The other one is from Chuck Palahniuk was talking, and I don't remember where, if it was at a workshop or something I listened to, but he was talking about like Mark Zuckerberg, right? And he was like, you know, and he was talking about other writers and saying like, sometimes I think the worst thing that can happen to a writer is that they become famous when they're like 22. You know, they write some big literary scene novel when they're a young person and it hits, And then the problem is they have to just keep doing that thing for the rest of their life. And he was like, that's kind of like where Zuckerberg is. You know, he had his big thing, his life's work, the thing that's going to be at the top line of his obituary when he was like 22 years old. And now he's trapped doing it forever. And that did make sense to me because I'm always like, I just saw it was like a picture of Zuckerberg in a suit going to testify in front of Congress or something again. And I'm like, why is he doing that? You know, MySpace Tom is in fucking Thailand taking pictures and writing a travel blog. You know what I mean? Like, he's living life. He is not testifying in front of Congress. Like, that sucks. Why would you do that? What? Why? But it's like, because that's the only thing he knows. That's the only thing he's had success. So you just have to keep doing it. So anyway, I think that's how I feel about that. But here's the other thing. When he was like, my dream was crushed that day, I was like, you should count yourself lucky, because most of us don't have our dreams crushed all in one day, all in one go. Most of us have our dreams crushed very slowly over a period of decades. You know what I mean? Some of us, you know, have made various attempts to write for a living, a modest goal. And yet it's just never worked out. And so over the decades, it just hasn't worked out and hasn't worked out. And then you find yourself just at some point like, I don't think this is going to happen. You know what I mean? You start thinking, I think my dream has been crushed. And it's like, maybe it has been crushed and I didn't notice the moment when it was crushed. You know, one day your dad lifts you up on his shoulders and then sets you back down and never picks you up again. And it's like, and you didn't even know at the time, you didn't know that was the last time that would happen. And I'm like, yeah, or like one day your dream really is crushed. It's done. It's buried. But you don't even know it at the time. But later you'll look back and be like, oh yeah, at that point, my dream was definitely dead. There you go, guys. Thanks for listening. Next time, I think I'll regale you with a tale of a thrombosed hemorrhoid. One of the most painful, if not the most painful, experiences of my entire life. Did I visit an urgent care? You bet. Did I have someone cut flesh near my butthole with a scalpel? Yes. Yes, I did. So, stay tuned. I know some of you, that's what you live for. Where others of you are like, I don't know, maybe tell us another fucking boring story about, you know, how your dreams are dead and some lady picked you up in a car and was mildly unprofessional. All right, we'll see you next time. Oh.